Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, July 11, 2016. Thousands flee their homes amid sporadic gunfire in Juba. The UN Secretary General calls on South Sudan's leaders to end hostilities and rein in their military commanders.
A message to President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar is clear. Do everything in your power to de-escalate the hostilities immediately. Order your respective forces to withdraw to their bases.
And the UN mission in South Sudan condemns the deadly fighting in Juba.
The United Nations urges all parties to respect the sanctity of the United Nations and condemns any deliberate targeting of the United Nations premises and its personnel.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir issued a declaration of cessation of hostilities this evening between the South Sudan Army and the SPLA in opposition. The order, enacted at 6 p.m. local time, goes into effect immediately and commands forces to cease any hostilities, to control their forces and protect the civil population and their property. The decree also demands that commanders of the forces ensure the protection of ethnic groups that may be targeted. It also says soldiers deployed at checkpoints within Juba City shall reduce and limit checkpoints to only essential and important installations and institutions. A statement by the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission acknowledges the fighting over the weekend is a major setback. In a separate statement, the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission called on both leaders to respect and adhere to the ceasefire. JMAC Chairman Festus Mohai says they have begun preparation for safe evacuation of JMAC staff from Juba. At the same time, UN Security Council condemned the escalation of violence in South Sudan and called on member states in the region to begin preparing additional troops for possible deployment to the country after holding a closed-door emergency meeting late yesterday at the New York headquarters. Ambassador Samantha Paul, the U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, said the Security Council expressed readiness to enhance UNMIS's role in responding to the crisis and provide security on the ground. The Council also reiterated that attacks against civilians, UN personnel, and UN premises may constitute war crimes. A group of 22 civil society groups and non-governmental organizations in Juba wrote a letter to the Security Council, urging the Council to utilize all means necessary to de-escalate further tension and clashes between armed troops. Here in Washington last night, the U.S. State Department issued a travel warning to American citizens, citing ongoing fighting, intercommunal violence, and violent crime. And the U.S. Embassy in Juba also ordered departure of non-essential staff. The U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon strongly condemned the latest deadly fighting around the capital, Juba, and called for an immediate end to the violence. The Secretary General also demanded that President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar do everything they can to control their military commanders. He said it's clear that South Sudan's leaders have failed their people.
Rarely has a country squandered so much promise so quickly. What kind of leadership is it that resorts to deadly weapons and identity politics? Time and again, failed leadership.
Secretary General Ban says international partners will be monitoring what happens next in South Sudan and will hold those leaders and others accountable who block implementation of the peace agreement and commit war crimes.
The international community, through its wide-ranging security, legal and human rights mechanisms, will be carefully monitoring developments in the coming days precisely in order to be able to identify on whom the burden of accountability for war crimes should ultimately be be praised.
Ban called on the international community and the UN Security Council to impose arms embargo on South Sudan.
When a government cannot or will not protect its people, and when warring parties seem more intent on enriching and empowering themselves at the expense of their people, the international community has a responsibility to act.
The UN chief says there are currently 12,000 UN peacekeepers on the ground in South Sudan, but they may be increased. He said in the past, UN aid workers and peacekeepers have been restricted from carrying out their work. He called on all parties in South Sudan to ease all restriction on UN peacekeepers and aid workers. The head of the UN mission in South Sudan says she is outraged at the resumption of violence in Juba for the past 5 days. Helen Margaret Loy says the fighting has had a severe impact on civilian population in the country. Tito Justin has more on that story for VOA from Juba.
Helen Margaret Loy says there was heavy fighting in close proximity to the compounds at UN House, Jebel and Tomping areas. Loy says the fighting has prompted about 1,000 internal displaced people to flee from the enemy's protection of civilian Site 1 into the enemy's compound at UN House, Jebel. The heavy fighting in downtown Juba since last week has forced hundreds of civilians to seek protection at enemy's stomping base. She says the UN is gravely concerned about the reports that armed forces have prevented civilians from seeking protection.
Both UN camps in Juba have sustained impacts from small arms and heavy weapons fire. The United Nations urges all parties to respect the sanctity of the United Nations and condemns any deliberate targeting of the United Nations premises and its personnel.
Laws says the United Nations peacekeepers will continue to protect displaced civilians at the POC sites in Juba. She says the UN is working hard to ensure that forces from both sides do not attack civilians.
For the safety and security of those displaced civilians, the United Nations urges all parties to ensure the civilian nature of the POC sites. UN peacekeepers are also mobilized to protect UN bases in UN House and Tomping.
Late last week, enemies and the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JEMEC, condemned the resurgence of violence in parts of South Sudan, which has left dozens dead or injured in Juba. But neither the government nor SPLMIO has yet to cease hostilities in the country. Laws is calling on the parties to immediately end the fighting and fully implement the August peace deal.
I have directly called on the leadership in South Sudan to immediately restrain their forces and to engage in dialogue to find a political solution to this crisis. My thoughts are with all South Sudanese who are suffering in these difficult moments.
Laws is also calling on all opposing parties to allow unfettered access to United Nations personnel so they can patrol the city and protect civilians. Members of the Security Council met on Sunday and expressed their support for enemies, adding that enemies must carry out its civilian protection mandate in order to save lives in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Addis Ababa, where the deputy spokesman for the SPLAIO is blaming the South Sudan government for attacking SPLAIO positions in Juba. Colonel Dixon Galwak says the SPLAIO headquarters came under fire this morning in Juba. He says the government of South Sudan has not been serious in implementing the August peace deal and calls the situation tense.
The situation for Juba remains uncertain, and the SPLAIO headquarters in Juba came to repeat and sustain attacks from the government forces of Salva Kiir this morning around 8 a.m. And this morning, you know, they came and attacked our defensive position, which is our cantonment site at Jebel area, and with the purpose and also the aim of capturing our area, where our commander-in-chief, Dr. Machar, and the chief of general staff are based. So on our side, as IO, we actually expressing our dismay and anger on government forces because of continual targeting of our people. And remember, this is not the first time the government has been actually targeting our people, starting with the killing of our LT Colonel George Gizmaga, together with other operative officers, including Nial Kwat Pinyin on July 2nd. And this is going on. And after that, instead of finding a solution, the government provoked the situation last Friday by attacking our defensive position and killing the bodyguard of Dr. Macha.
How did it all start on Friday? Could you tell us who started the fighting on Friday?
On Friday, remember when the meeting was called and the deputy president, Dr. Machar, was calling the meeting. You know, we deployed our forces around, and we have, you know, approximately 50 military personnel. And when the meeting was on, you know, the vehicle, which was heavily armed, appeared from nowhere. And then you know, they start, you know, spraying the bullet on our forces, which result to the killing of our officers, who are the protection unit of the first vice president. It was the government starting it, and I hope the international community is aware of it because there were people who were in.
But the government spokesperson, Michael Makoye, is also saying that the SPLA-IO were the ones who started the fighting on Friday.
You know, Makoye is not somebody who speaks on the reality. And, this is the time where the country now is embarked on peace and people need to say the truth. If we are the one who are fighting, why it happened? Why the fighting is taking place in Jebel, you know, which is our military base? Why is it happening in Jebel? And also they are using illegal checkpoint, which is the Jebel checkpoint, by attacking, by targeting our officers. Makoye, you need to be realistic. And this is untrue. It was the government that killed our officers, and in the morning, they continue targeting our headquarters with the aim of, targeting our chief of general staff.
And where is Dr. Riek Machar right now as we speak?
As we are speaking now, Tanz, I cannot tell you where the chairman is, but he's safe because I cannot tell you he's hiding out because the fighting is ongoing. As we are speaking now, the fighting is going on in the northern side of the town and also is taking place in the southern part of the town. So, but what
which
I can
locations,
assure you,
which locations,
and all the citizens, the chairman is safe.
Which locations are you talking about when you say the northern part and the southern part of town? Which locations specifically?
I'm talking about the illegal checkpoint that has been set up by the government in the northern part, which is the checkpoint of Jebel Kunjul. And also the fighting is taking place also at our headquarters, which is Jebel, but we push the government forces. We push them back now. We fight them back. And now they are retreating towards the main bridge, which is the custom.
That's Colonel Dickson Galwak, the deputy SPLA-IO spokesman. He was speaking to me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, earlier today. Meanwhile, the spokesman of the South Sudan Army has asked government troops to return to the barracks. Brigadier Lul Roy Kwong issued the order, which aired on South Sudan TV this evening. I'm appealing to all organized forces to return back to the barracks. Anybody who is holding guns should return back. Those who resist will be shot on the spot. That's South Sudan government military spokesman Brigadier Lul Roy Kong appealing to soldiers to go back to the barracks. The New York-based Human Rights Watch is condemning the fighting in South Sudan and calling on the United Nations Security Council to impose arms embargo to end the hostilities. Akshay Kumar, the Deputy United Nations Director at the Human Rights Watch, says implementing an arms embargo could immediately ground South Sudan's attack helicopters and limit the ability of armed forces to target civilians.
The Secretary General of the UN made an incredibly important call just a few minutes ago. He finally very clearly and unequivocally came out in favor of an arms embargo on South Sudan. This has been an issue that's been kicked around the Security Council for months and months and months. But to have the Secretary General speak out in favor I think is incredibly important, and hopefully the council will listen.
And what difference will an arms embargo on South Sudan make?
Well, pragmatically, we think that an arms embargo would eventually, in the mid and long term, reduce violations and human rights abuses against civilians that are being committed with heavy weapons like shells and mortars. I just heard about a maternity ward getting shelled earlier today in South Sudan, in Juba. And then more specifically, operationally, we're hopeful that the foreigners who are operating attack helicopters on behalf of the SPLA and maintaining them, the ones who are really enabling those helicopters to fly in the sky and wreak the terror and havoc that they're wreaking and fire missiles on even UN installations, will be prevented from doing so, because a global arms embargo would prevent not only selling weapons to South Sudan, but also selling the kind of assistance and technical support and operational know-how that happens.
But South Sudan's neighbors have to be in support of the arms embargo. So with that in mind, could you tell me about some of the challenges that we might have in enacting or imposing this arms embargo on South Sudan?
What we do know is that 15 members of the UN Security Council need to vote in favor of the embargo, and that includes three African countries, Egypt, Angola, and Senegal. But that's it. Once those 15 countries vote, then a global embargo is in force. And so anybody who continues to sell weapons or material or provide support militarily to South Sudan's combatant forces would be against international law. As you said, enforcement, of course, will rely a lot on the region, because that's how arms get into the country. But I want to be clear that actually imposing the embargo itself is something that can happen solely through the Security Council and requires just those 15 countries to come to a decision.
That was Akshaya Kumar, the Human Rights Watch Deputy United Nations Director, speaking to Ayen Bior from Washington. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, civilians are fleeing from Torit because of fighting there. More on that story coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how many languages do you speak?
Swahili is a major. Then I speak in my mother tongue. Then I speak Arabic. Then I speak official language, which actually is English. Yeah, that is the four language which I really speak and write and communicate.
I speak my local language, which is Zande language, some simple Arabic, English, and some little Luganda.
I can speak almost five languages. My language, Kuku, Swahili, Madi, Arabic, but it's somehow, but can tell me. Even English is not fluent, but can tell me a bit.
One is English, second is Arabic, and then local language from Luo language, and then Dinka language.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's former Deputy Minister for Defense says President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar are not in control of their troops. Majak Diagot says some individuals within South Sudan Army have taken advantage of the confusion to create insecurity in Juba. He says South Sudan needs urgent intervention from the international community to restore peace in the capital.
Well, my hunch initially is that the nature of the permanent ceasefire arrangements as part of the agreement for the resolution of conflict in South Sudan were flawed. Our group, the former political detainees, advanced a proposal in Addis that there should be a total demilitarization of Juba. We also advanced a proposal on a third-party force, you know, to provide for public safety and human security in the national capital. This was turned down, especially when the IGAD heads of states met in Kampala. They came up with this kind of security arrangement, which has now become part of the peace agreement. And so basically, you know, from that standpoint, we knew there were a lot of gaps and anything could implode.
I know that the fact that you are in the United States, you are in touch with leaders in the country. What are the leaders telling you that about this fighting in Juba? I mean, is there going to be an end to it because a lot of people displaced? And it's just a crisis in the town.
Well, basically, but what are we hearing from Kiir and Riak? They said, you know, when the shootout occurred in J1 within the very vicinity of their presence, they were saying that they didn't know what was taking place outside the walls of the palace. So basically, it shows that these are leaders who are not in charge, even of their bodyguards, let alone being in charge of the country. So the country is basically, if I can put it in quotes, is leaderless at the moment because leadership is all about command and control.
Yeah, and today President Kiir issued a decree for ceasefire, asking commanders to all go back to their base. I saw Information Minister Michael Makui also making an appeal on television. The SPLA spokesperson, Roy Kong, was also making an appeal to soldiers to go back to their barracks. Now, when politicians are talking and the military are talking, who is going to be heard? Whose words is respected?
Well, they have plunged the country into a total state of anarchy, and I don't personally think that they command the respect of their soldiers, and that they command the trust of the people of South Sudan. So I don't really think that anybody is going to listen, but other than being doubtful about whether they are going to call the shots at the moment, I hope for the best, because if all the warlords who now call the shots on both sides could listen and accept to adhere by the terms of the ceasefire, whether unilateral or bilateral, then that would bring some sigh of relief to the people of South Sudan at the moment.
And if you're given an opportunity now, today, to speak to President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar, what would you tell them?
In 2013, I personally, you know, in the wee hours of the crisis, I spoke to Hilda Jansen, and this has now been captured in her book, page 180 and 81, of the need of the two leaders appealing for calm and arresting the situation right away. They didn't accept that, and Hilda conveyed this to them. They didn't accept that. I thought on the 7th, you know, after the shootout around the palace, when they came out an appeal for calm, I thought they did the right thing, and I personally applauded that. But then they did it at the time when they have lost respect of their own men and of their own bodyguards. Nobody was listening to them, and that's why that's the reason why the fighting resumed the Sunday after the clashes.
That's Majak Dagot, South Sudan's former Deputy Minister for Defense. He was speaking to me earlier today here in our studios in Washington. Meanwhile, some news coming out of Juba right now. iRadio is reporting that First Vice President Riek Machar has ordered his troops to go back to the barracks. That's coming out from iRadio in Juba. Hundreds of residents of Tori Town in Imatong State are fleeing their homes as fighting broke out this morning in some parts of the town. Church leaders say the church is housing thousands of families at their compounds and other families that have fled to Inmis compound. Heavy gunfire were heard mostly in the eastern part of the town and areas of Gumbo west of Torit.
SPLA and joint police units in Torit town of Imatong estate have repulsed an attack by an unknown armed group in Torit this morning. The fighting started at around 9 a.m. in areas of Lopulare and Gumbo and lasted nearly 2 hours. Hundreds of women and children fled from the villages of Longute, Kuku and Mairo to the nearby St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church for safety during the morning fighting. Anyese Keji, who fled the violence in Torit, says she is desperately searching for her 8 children who ran in different directions when they were told to leave.
We were lying down inside the house when a soldier knocked at the door, telling us to get out and go to the church quickly. But now I don't know where my children are. 8 of them disappeared, and I don't know where they are. I am going to the church to look for them. I pray they are safe.
An IDP who preferred not to be identified by name out of fear of retribution says his hopes have been dashed by unnecessary fighting and displacement.
At this moment, we are now in Caritas compound. We are trying to save ourselves here. Up to now, we have not yet get the clue about the shooting. Up to now, this is still unclear. It is the first time of it a kind. All these other years, 2013, when other crises happened in Juba, nothing was happening here. Then it is only today, by coincidence, we have heard the shooting is starting from Lopulare site area.
Father Jacquino Lomogo is the parish priest of St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church. He says the church has received hundreds of displaced people at its administrative compound of Caritas Turi.
According to the information that I received from the student of Akia Memorial Secondary School, they were told that you go home. So just they got me within the compound church. After some minutes, there was a gunshot.
Father Lomogo says he saw school children near the military units running this morning as the military warned of an attack by armed group believed to be loyal to SPLAIO.
So far, they would reach 1,500, but now excluded these old people. It's already stopped almost a second, 2 hours.
On Saturday, witnesses say the group attacked a police headquarters in the Gumbo residential area of Turit municipality, but no casualties were reported. County officials in Magui also reported a similar attack at a police station and prison units in Magui early Saturday. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Turit.
The reported incident in Turit has no connection with what is happening in Juba. While in Mundri, hundreds of civilians have fled the town today after fighting broke out this morning in Amadi State between government forces and a group of armed youth along Mundri-Bangalo Road, about 20 kilometers from the state headquarters. Amadi State Governor Joseph Ngere says the vigilante group tried to attack military barracks. Gift Friday reports for VOA from Yambio.
Mundri resident John Kami says he and his family ran at least 5 miles from Mundri town when the fighting erupted.
There was a shooting within the town. So now we are outside. All the town is empty. Nobody in the town.
Kami says people were fleeing in different directions. Kami says he fled with his 2 children and wife for safety, which was not easy, he said, because it is raining. Governor of Amadi State, Joseph Ngere, says unidentified gunmen attacked the town early this morning.
In Mundo this morning at about 7:30 a.m., a group of armed people came with an attempt to come and attack us in the town on the side of road going to Bangalore. So they met our forces on the bridge and they were repulsed completely. Although there was a panic in the town, which led to the displacement or movement of population away from the town.
Governor Ngere says one civilian sustained a minor injury from a stray bullet during the morning fighting. The governor says the situation is now under control. Jamie Sebit is the Relief and Rehabilitation Coordinator in Mundri West County. He says hundreds of people have fled into different directions and are hiding in the bush. Sebit calls the situation catastrophic. He says when it is the rain season like this, it is hard for children to stay under the trees. Sebit predicts there is going to be a lot of typhoid, malaria and respiratory diseases as a result of people fleeing their homes and hiding in the bush. He says today's fighting caught people in the middle of harvesting their crops. Ngere says the government can only protect civilians who have stayed in the town.
We are responsible for civilians who are in the town. They cannot get problems when they are in the town. Let them come back if they are listening to me. Otherwise, we will not be responsible for anybody who is out of our domain outside.
Ngere says security was recently beefed up to protect the people of Amadi State from further attacks by armed groups. Gift Friday for VOA News. Yambio.
That's our show for this Monday. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.